spirit. Next, we've prepared a selection of some of our finest radio productions filled with stories and soundscapes designed to enrich your day. For those seeking a deeper connection with the Holy Quran, don't go anywhere. Let's recite the Quran with Mr. Habibullah Fasizadeh. This program focuses on enhancing your Quranic recitation skills at level 2. So stay with us for the journey ahead as today's special is coming up next. Let's reflect, connect, and grow together in today's broadcast. Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. By Allah's name, we start this episode of today's special. Salam to you, dear listener of IRIB English Radio. Today, we're going to speak about an interesting topic, and that is marriage and responsibilities.
Yourself, can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
Today is Friday, 30th of Jamadil Awal, 1447, of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 30th of Aban, 1404, of the Solar calendar, and the 21st of November, 2025, of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As the ritual of this program, we open Allah's book first. For today, we listen to verses 6 to 13 of chapter Naba. We bless these moments. And of course, we'll learn one point.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ألم نجعل الأرض مهادا
Have we not made the earth a resting place?
والجبال أوتادا
And the mountains as stakes.
وخلقناكم أزواجا
And we created you in pairs.
وَجَعَلْنَا نَوْمَكُمْ سُبَاتًا
And made your sleep a means for rest.
وَجَعَلْنَا اللَّيْلَ لِبَاسًا
And made the night as clothing.
وَجَعَلْنَا النَّهَارَ مَعَاشًا
And made the day for livelihood.
وَبَنَيْنَا فَوْقَكُمْ سَبَعًا شِدَادًا
And constructed above you seven strong heavens.
وَجَعَلْنَا سِرَاجًا وَهَّاجًا
And made therein a burning lamp.
لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
مَا لَنَا رَبٌ سِوَى
The term azwaj is the plural form of term zawj, which means mate or companion, a couple and gender household, husband or wife, from which not only is a man created and through which his generation survives, but also his spouse is counted as the reason for his spiritual tranquility. In other words, the genders are the complement of each other, then they become complete and this makes them a whole since. And this makes them a whole.
Since the term azwaj also means kinds, species, and classes, some commentators have rendered it to mean the variations in men from the point of color, race, language, and talents.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life, but you know I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Today we continue the topic marriage and responsibilities. Islam emphasizes gender justice rather than gender equality, and the concept of justice can guide the fair division of household responsibilities. Justice, in this context, means that duties are shared based on the needs, based on strength, situation of each partner. Prophet Muhammad's participation in household chores provides a powerful example of how justice manifests in shared responsibilities. Prophet Muhammad's example in participating in household chores provides valuable lessons on humility and the importance of shared responsibilities within the family. These actions emphasize the Islamic values of mutual support and respect between the spouses, contributing to a harmonious and balanced family life.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to another edition from series of today's special from Arab English Radio. This is Ali, your host, and we are with you with another topic to discuss. So we have to be well-mannered to our wives. The world takes its path according to a regular pattern. Events happen and show themselves one after another. Our small existence in this vast universe is like a small particle which moves and impinges on other particles at every instant of time. The running of this world is not in our hands, and the events of this world do not occur according to our will. From the moment that one sets foot outside his house in the morning until the time he returns home in the evening, one may be confronted with hundreds of unpleasant circumstances. One comes across a great many difficulties in the arena of life. You might be insulted by someone, have an unfriendly colleague, have to wait for the bus too long, have been accused of something at work, have lost some money, have been robbed, or have come across anyone of a number of similar events. That could happen to anybody, anywhere. You might be so frustrated with usual everyday events of your life that you resemble a time bomb which could explode anytime. Well, you may think that you cannot blame other people or the world for your mishaps. So when you come home, you try to vent your anger out on your wife and children. IRIB English Radio. Recitation as well as translation of Quran.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ.
And we certainly gave Moses the scripture that perhaps they would be guided.
Short commentary of the Quran.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله.
Islamic issues.
Institution of the family in Islam is the most beloved by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
The life of the infallible. All in all, in today's special, IRIB English Radio.
This is today's special. The function of childbearing remains incomplete without its more crucial part of child rearing and upbringing, their education, orientation, character building, and gradual initiation into religion and culture. It is because of this aspect that family care becomes a full-time job. Not other institution or even a number of institutions can take care of this function. To be conscious of duty to the ties of the womb is an all-embracing demand, includes obligations towards the wife, the children, and other relations, and take care of what is for you, in chapter Al-Baqarah, also refers to the same function. One is enjoined to take care of oneself and the members of the family. The Quran says, O you who believe, strive to protect yourselves and your wives and children from fire. It's our duty to learn, helping each other with our household responsibilities enthusiastically. The policy of joint agreement should be your guide. Assume household responsibilities that you enthusiastically accept. And then when you help each other with those unpleasant tasks that are left, only help if you can do it enthusiastically. By following this policy, you may decide to change your attitude about some of the responsibilities on your list. When you know that the only way to do something is to do it yourself, you may decide that it doesn't need to be done after all. In fact, you may find that what kept you convinced of its importance was the notion that your spouse was supposed to do it. The policy guarantees your mutual care, especially when you feel like being uncaring. It prevents you from gaining at your spouse's expense and trying to force your spouse into an unpleasant way of life with you. It points you in a direction that will give you both happiness, fulfillment, and best of all, the feeling of love for each other.
You know, there are some brothers that have so high expectations and they always expect their wives, you know, to be presentable to them, to decorate themselves, to be always there for them, and they forget about themselves. You know, he always wants his wife to be beautiful and slim when he has a belly this big and he's not taking care of himself. You also take care of yourself. Not just, you know, your wife, you expect her to take care of herself. They say once there was, you know, a man, he was on the scale checking out his weight when his wife saw him. So she told, and she saw him sucking in his belly. So she told him, honey, that's not going to help, okay? So he told her, honey, yes, it will help because I'm trying to see the numbers and check my weight. Take care of yourself. If you expect your spouse to take care of herself, you also take care of yourself. Once, Al-Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth Imam of Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon him, he was seen dressing up, you know, looking very sharp. And the companions were asking him, you know, why are you doing this? Is there a special occasion that you're taking care of yourself? You've dressed up very properly. The Imam alayhi salam said, I have a wife. I have a wife and I have an obligation. And the more I make myself presentable to my wife, the more I protect her chastity, the more she will be faithful in this relationship. Unfortunately, many men, they disregard this. They think only a woman has to take care of this aspect. As for him, he can look however he wants, however he looks. It's not an issue. This is wrong. The religion of Islam encourages both spouses to be presentable to one another, to take care of their looks, of their hygiene.
Dear brothers and sisters, thank you very much for joining us. It seems that our time is over, so inshallah we continue this interesting topic in the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Till tomorrow, have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers, sisters, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So today we read a hadith, actually a quotation from the Holy, the Lady Fatima, peace be upon her, addressing her husband, Imam Ali alayhi salam. She says, "O Abu al-Hasan," that was the nickname of Imam Ali alayhi salam, or it's his title. "O Abu al-Hasan, no, I am ashamed. I feel ashamed before my Lord to burden you with what you cannot bear, what you cannot afford." Means that she doesn't like to kind of put something on his shoulders that he cannot bear. So these words are more than personal reassurance. They are a profound lesson about family care and support and collaboration. Lady Fatima reminds us that in a family, responsibilities should be shared wisely with love, trust, and consideration for each other's capacity. So family care starts with understanding limits. Some parents, some fathers, some mothers, they don't know the limits and they don't consider them about their children. And some children on the other hand. So just as Lady Fatima acknowledged Imam Ali alayhi salam's strengths and limits, we too should recognize the abilities and challenges of our family members. Psychology shows that empathy and realistic expectations reduce stress and strengthen bonds. Overloading a spouse, child, or sibling with tasks beyond their capacity can harm relations and create resentment. So collaboration and shared responsibility matters. Family is a team. Duties, whether household, financial, or emotional, should be divided according to capacity and strength. The Quran highlights cooperation in family life when it says, "And cooperate in righteousness and piety, but do not cooperate in sin and aggression." So by working together, families can thrive without overburdening any one person. Lady Fatima modeled this approach. Love, care, respect guided every interaction with her husband and her children and her her father, the Holy Prophet. So, practical lessons for today. Communicate openly. Ask your family members what they can handle and be honest about your own limits. Share duties wisely. Align tasks with strengths. One may be good at finances, another at cooking, another at emotional support. And provide reassurance and support. Just as Lady Fatima reassured Imam Ali alayhi salam, encourage your family, show gratitude, and make them feel valued. And in this society as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
May the peace, blessings, and mercy of God be with you all. The interests of colonial powers in our countries date back a long time, as we have explained on numerous occasions. However, in terms of trade, after the conclusion of the Napoleonic campaigns and wars in 1815, European commerce made an unprecedented inroad into the Arab East and North Africa. Local societies were self-sufficient, but with the advent of commercial incursions and the presence of European capital, our economies became integrated into the global economic system in a detrimental way, as dependent economies supplying raw materials and consuming European manufactured goods, according to the book A History of Modern Middle East by American historians William Cleveland and Martin Panton. This point is crucial for understanding the European colonial plan to conquer Western Asia since the days of the Ottoman Empire, aiming to weaken it from within by tying it to the global economy and making it financially and economically dependent. After the fall of the Ottoman Empire, Western capitalism divided our territories, which it referred to as the Middle East, with the goal of securing trade routes, raw materials, and new markets for the expanding global economy dominated by Europe, according to the same authors. The control of oil, essential for fueling expanding capitalist economies, became the central focus of Western competition in the region, and the primary motivation for establishing and maintaining political and economic dominance over our countries. According to American sociologist Bert Pilbaruglu in his book The Turmoil in the Middle East, Imperialism, War, and Political Instability, Britain aimed to redraw the borders of the Levant in North Africa in a way that would allow it to control strategically important areas such as southern Iraq due to its oil reserves and Egypt because of the Suez Canal, which serves as a gateway to Asian colonies, particularly India. Iran, due to its oil wealth, was also a primary target of Western plans. Lord Curzon, the British governor of India from 1899 to 1905, stated that Persia was one of the key pieces on the board of global domination. Almost half a century later, in 1953, Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh made the decision to nationalize the country's oil. Britain and the United States then collaborated to orchestrate a coup against him, which solidified the Shah's regime and Western influence in Iran until the Islamic Revolution's triumph in 1979. How did the interests of the United States and neocolonialism arise during the interwar period? Oil and its vast reserves in the Arab region were the driving force behind American imperialism. We already mentioned that European commercial interests began to manifest themselves in our territories at the beginning of the 19th century. This raises the question, when did American ambitions and neocolonialism begin to emerge in our countries? The answer lies in the period between the two world wars, specifically from 1918 to 1939. Once again, oil and its vast reserves in Arab countries were the main driving force behind American imperialism. Controlling this strategic resource was essential for the United States' dominance over the global economy, especially after World War II. One of the key reasons for expanding American influence was to contain communism, similar to how Iranian influence is viewed as a threat today. After World War II, several West Asian countries that gained independence implemented policies focused on local development, raised the prices of exported raw materials, and limited both imports and foreign investment. The United States, on its part, viewed these economic independence policies as a threat. It needed raw materials at low prices to sustain its productive capacity and commercial advantages, and it sought to increase its investments in the region. Thus, it decided to become increasingly involved in the policies of Southeast Asia and West Asia the area it refers to the Middle East and North Africa, as detailed by American historian Henry Heller in his book, The Cold War and the New Imperialism. In this work, he specifically mentions the U.S. intervention in Iran, 1953, and Lebanon, 1958, as well as the pressure exerted by its French and British allies during the Suez Crisis, 1956. It also points out that in 1957, there was a direct intervention through the proclamation of the Eisenhower Doctrine, which established the right of the United States to intervene militarily to ensure the security of any West Asian country threatened by communist subversion. To summarize how this structure of hegemony operates in practice, there are five interconnected tools. First, the presence of local regimes subordinate to the United States. Second, military bases. Third, economic and financial policies along with privatization and the application of sanctions when necessary. Fourth, indirect interventions, coups, and the encouragement of civil wars. Fifth, the control of energy supply chains and waterways such as the Strait of Hormuz, the Bab el-Mandeb Canal, and the Suez Canal, along with their infrastructure, pipelines, ports, terminals. Currently, there is a new colonial offensive in the region. The fate of the Arab regimes is in the hands of the United States, and many of them have fully integrated into the Western system, as stated in one of his interviews by the late Lebanese economist, thinker, and Minister of Finance, George Quorum. In light of the above, some may argue that the primary concern of the West is not the colonial structure, but rather the protection of Israel. Those who make this argument often base it on the influence of the Israeli lobby in Washington, claiming that it shapes political decisions in the United States and other Western capitals. Our response is that the influence of the Israeli lobby is indeed real, just as is the case with the Christian Zionist movement in the United States, whose religious beliefs advocate for the establishment of a Jewish national homeland in Palestine. However, both the lobby and the movement operate within a broader strategic framework defined by the logic of colonialism. Israel, therefore, serves as a tool of colonialism rather than an end itself. A clear example of the limited power of the Israeli lobby can be seen in the 1956 war, the tripartite aggression by Britain, France, and Israel against Egypt. At that time, Washington urges its allies to withdraw from Egyptian territory and halt the offensive, as its main priority was to strengthen the international order under its leadership and safeguard trade flows, preventing the resurgence of the old European empires. In other words, when Israel's tactics clash with the system's structure, the logic of American colonialism takes precedence. This colonialism, both European and American, continues to have interests in our countries and aims to strengthen them. Changes in the global geopolitical dynamics have given the United States a decisive advantage in this process. The United States and its allies will continue to treat our countries as incapable of self-governance, of developing public institutions, of formulating economic policies that align with social interests, and of protecting themselves against what they call Iranian expansion or the rise of Chinese influence. According to this perspective, our countries will still require the oversight of the powers from the Northwest. The presence of a dominant class in all Arab countries allied with colonialism and serving its interests within state administrations means that oil production has not been disrupted in West Asia. Trade routes remain strategic and raw materials continue to be exploited, and investment interests have not ceased. Now more than ever, these countries are closely linked to international security. Western Asia, North Africa, the Arab world, and their surrounding regions serve as the gateway to the Indian and Pacific Oceans. This is how the West views us, and there are three crucial maritime routes for global trade. the Strait of Hormuz, the Bab-el-Mandeb Strait, and the Suez Canal. These three strategic passages highlight that the West, led by the United States, is determined to dominate our countries in military, political, economic, and all other aspects. Their desire for domination is not directly linked to Israel, even though it acts as a tool to facilitate this hegemony. It also does not depend on the decisions of the people, the existence of forces fighting against Israel, or the presence of the Iranian regime, although these forces and decisions complicate the establishment of total Western hegemony over our countries. To be realistic, let's test this idea with a simple experiment. Let's imagine, theoretically, that all the supposed Western excuses for intervening in our countries disappear. No resistance weapons, no war with Israel, no Iranian influence. What would the American-European domination structure then demand? What would it do? It would return to its fundamental principles: unrestricted market openness, investment legislation, and privatization that favors the West, control over energy and navigation in their straits, a clear alignment on security against its global adversaries, an acceptance of the sanctions system and international arbitration as the highest judicial authority. In other words, the Western view of sanctions would be imposed as the arbiter between good and evil. Any serious rejection of these demands would trigger the same openness. Financial pressure, sanctions, support for internal factions, and if necessary, direct or indirect military interventions. The real conflict isn't about excuses, but rather the right to political and economic self-determination and the pursuit of genuine independence. If the Iranian system were to collapse tomorrow, if all Arab and Islamic countries signed peace agreements with Israel, and if all resistance movements laid down their arms, the United States and its European allies would not allow even a single day of true independence. On the contrary, the colonial offensive would escalate and become even more brutal. The clearest example, mentioned at the beginning of this episode and the subject of a special analysis, is the fundraising model used by the Persian Gulf regimes, aimed at the global hegemonic power in Washington. Just as colonialism, after World War I, destroyed societies and deprived them of development, education, health, and industry. Similarly, as societies have been fragmented by sectarianism and tribalism, and as the power of a tyrannical minority has solidified at the expense of the majority, we will witness these manifestations again, but with even greater brutality. In light of this reality, we can confidently state that the cost of confronting colonialism remains significantly lower than the cost of surrender. We look forward to seeing you soon in a new episode, God willing.
See it all in your face. time you stop, you're losing faith, no. I know you have unanswered questions, but those are the ones you need to solve yourself. Before me, it's easy, 'cause I know you see me. Before me, it's easy, 'cause I know you see me. Now I know you're kinda scared now. I can see it all in your face. For every trial and tribulation, there will be a saving grace. Allah will never burden. We're more than you can bear. How can you reach the heavens without going through the tears? For me it's easy, 'cause I know you see me. For me it's easy, 'cause I know you see me.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
فدعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum, brother Mahdi. Thank you for having me, and assalamu alaikum to all the dear listeners of this program. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of several Quranic parts. First, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the music or the musical miracle of the Noble Quran. Then, we all are going to listen to a recitation by a famous reciter of the Noble Quran. And at the end, Brother Muhammad is going to analyze that recitation from different aspects. Stay tuned.
إن هذا القرآن الذي جل فيه.
Well, in the first part of today's program, we're going to continue our previous discussion about how the sounds of letters of the Noble Quran are impressive and can affect its audience. Dear brother, let's continue.
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are certain words and the letters that make up certain words. We could actually feel the meaning of that word just by pronouncing them. And sometimes just the pronunciation of a word is difficult. This difficulty is also what exactly that word, the meaning of that word is accompanied by difficulty. Mm-hmm. It's, for example, وَإِنَّ مِنْكُمْ لَمَنْ لَيُبَطِّئَنَّ. You have to be really careful how you pronounce this word. It's like you slow down because it's so difficult to pronounce this word. And what does لَيُبَطِّئَنَّ means? It means delay. It means making pause
and pronouncing it actually makes you pause.
Yeah, it makes you pause and you can't pronounce it quickly. It's a little difficult if you're not if it's the first time that you're pronouncing this word.
And even the second or third.
لا يبطئن. And also the ta has a tashdeed and also a kasra.
Mm-hmm.
That's really difficult. And the noon also has shadda as tashdeed. Or another example is actually Surah Hud, verse 28. يا قومي أرأيتم إن كنت على بينة من ربي وآتاني رحمة من عنده فعميت عليكم أنلزمكموها وأنتم لها كارهون. Again, we have the same thing, the same concept with the word أنلزمكموها وأنتم لها كارهون.
Does that still mean pause?
أنلزمكموها comes from إلزام, which means forcing someone to do something. And كارهون means disliking something, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we could feel this dislike and, you know, not liking something just by the word أنلزمكموها. We can picture that disliking because, just again, we have this, the delay of the pause that we have to make, how we have to pronounce this word slowly. It's difficult to do that. It's difficult to pronounce this word. And كارهون, كراها, is actually means not liking something because it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So we have أنلزمكموها.
This way it tries to convey the meaning.
Yeah, exactly. It conveys the meaning of كراها, disliking.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad. And thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program, Let's Recite the Quran. Don't go away. كتاب الله كتاب الله كتاب الله. Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now in the second part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, we invite you to listen to the recitation of Surah Al-Anbiya, verses 104 to 107, recited by Brother Qasim Razi'i, preceded by its English translation. Let's enjoy it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
يوم نطوي السماء. ولقد كتبنا في الزبور من بعد الذكر أن الأرض يرثها عبادي الصالحون ولقد
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was recitation of verses 104 to 107 of Suratul Anbiya, recited by Brother Qasim Razi'i. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. One thing I've noticed in almost all of the surahs of the Quran is that the end of the verses have rhyme.
Yes.
Each verse, usually we have this rhyme. For example, we have fa'ilin, abidin, khalidun, tu'adun, salihun. These are all rhymes. In almost all the surahs of the Quran, this is observed. Allah, he has made the last word of the verse rhymes with the other verses, the verses that are after it.
In Juz 30, I think, it's more obvious.
Yeah, because the verses are very short.
They're short, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But in the longer verses, it's not as obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in terms of tajweed, a lot could be said.
Yes.
In verse 104, we have يَوْمَ نَطَوِ السَّمَاءَ كَطَيِّ السِّجِلِّ لِلْكُتُبِ. The ta has sukun. And ta is a letter of qalqala.
Yes.
And we have to apply qalqala. نَطَوِ السَّمَاءَ. We have to make sure that the ta, the sound of it, is heard. Even though it's sakin, there should be a kind of movement, a vowel-like movement when pronouncing the ta. Because if we don't do this movement, if we don't apply the qalqala,
the movement of articulator, you mean?
Yeah, in the mouth. Yeah. If you don't apply the qalqala, the sound of ta won't be heard
completely.
يَوْمَ نَطْوِ السَّمَاء. نَطْوِ. We didn't hear the ta clearly with all of its characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why we have to apply qalqala. Just like in the word kutub. كَطَيِّ السِّجِلِّ لِلْكُتُبِ.
بِ. The ba.
The ba has qalqala. It's not a vowel, haraka.
Yes.
It's neither fatha, kasra, nor dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a neutral vowel. Okay? Lil kutub. Kutub. You don't say kutuba.
Mm-hmm.
Kutubi, kutubu, kutub. Okay?
And what are the rest of letters of qalqala?
They are in order qaf, ta, ba, jim, and dal, which comprise the sentence qutubi jad.
It's a sentence, interesting.
Yeah. It really doesn't make that much sense, but it's a sentence which is used to, we use this sentence to memorize the five letters of qalqala. Kama bada'na, we have hamzatul qatar, and the word bada'na. We have to make sure that the hamza is pronounced like a glottal stop.
Mm-hmm.
There is no qalqala. We don't say bada'na. We say bada'na. And at the end, we do ikhtilas. We quickly pronounce the next letter. We don't make a pause in between the hamzatul qat and the noon. So we shouldn't say bada'na, bada'na, bada'na. It happens quickly. This
yes.
is called ikhtilas. We have it for in all places. For example, awwal khalqin, khalqin. You have to quickly pronounce the qaf. If you say khalqin with a pause, that's incorrect.
Okay.
Wa'adan alayna. The ayn has a sukoon. We have to make sure that it's not pronounced with qalqala. In fact, the most difficult rule of qalqala is not applying qalqala.
Yes.
Applying qalqala is easier than not applying it for certain letters. For example, ayn. Applying qalqala to ayn is very easy. Wa'adan. Wa'adan alayna.
This way we should pronounce it like a shadda or plosive if you are to apply qalqala.
Wa'adan.
Wa'adan.
You don't say wa'adan. We say wa'adan. That's different. If we pronounce it like a letter of shadda, it would be wa'adan. Or if it's a letter of raha, it would be wa'adan. But we say, if you say wa'adan, you're just giving qalqala to the ayn. You're not pronouncing it with shadda.
While being fricative,
yeah,
we still can apply qalqala?
Yeah, it's possible, yes.
Can we apply, you mean we can apply qalqala to fricatives?
Yeah, we could. but we shouldn't. This is the point. Yes, we could. For example, Islam. See, you're giving a movement to the scene. Whenever any letter that is sakin can get qalqala, but most letters should not get qalqala. Only the letters of qalqala. So if you say wa'adan alayna, that's incorrect. If you say arusala, that's incorrect. Arusala.
Yes, that's right.
And in verse 105, walaqad, again we have the dal with qalqala. Katabna, we have a ba with qalqala. Katabna. And fizzaburi, we have a ra with tarqiq and the word zaburi. And also adhikri. Adhikri. Again, that we have the ikhtilas of ra, where we have to quickly pronounce the ra. We shouldn't say min ba'di dhikri. 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 Dhikri.
Would you let us know the meaning of ikhtilas?
Ikhtilas means stealing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It means part of the previous letter, sound of the previous letter, goes into the next letter.
Uh-huh.
Okay? This is meaning of ikhtilas. Of course, sometimes too much ikhtilas is incorrect. For example, if you say ta'malun, there's too much ikhtilas. The ayn goes too much into the meme.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't say ta'malun or ta'lamun. Ta'lamun. You first pronounce the ayn with tawassut and with all of its characteristics, and then at the end, you do the ikhtilas.
You pronounce lam.
Yeah.
To actually.
Or the meme.
To avoid that pause which might occur.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق A diverse range of programs, spirituality.